the buzzer, McCord on its way.
Oh, my goodness.
They have to get it in with no timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
And welcome to the world's number one podcast. Once again, Chris Cotter alongside Seth Greenberg and Dan Dokic. Mark Few, Gonzaga head coach, is going to join us in a little bit. His team is just running roughshod through the West Coast Conference. Got a game against BYU coming up on Saturday. Looking forward to the tournament, though. That's going to be sort of the week before the other tournaments begin in terms of championship week. They'll actually have their championship game on Tuesday before Selection Sunday, so we'll talk to Coach Few about that. But first off, Doc, how you doing, man? Where are you, up in Indianapolis?
I am. I'm having a spectacular day. The Hoosiers lost, the Boilers beat them, and so the phones are off the hook,
right,
and life is good.
They're done.
And you're not stirring it up at all.
Look, Romeo Langford didn't even take a shot in the second half, Seth. Not a shot.
He was compared to Abe Lincoln when he signed.
Some
how did that happen?
Freaking preacher talking about getting grown men to chant character at a press. People are nuts, man. I'm telling you. A good thing the three of us are just totally sane and
same
page.
Yeah, because as you mentioned, you know, you're up there in Indianapolis, and the most sane person of all of us, Coach Greenberg, back when the spot of his most sane moment of his life, Cameron Indoor, is now getting set for North Carolina and Duke. How's it going down there, Coach?
They love me here, too.
They really do.
Oh, yeah, they do. They love me. They say, why? Well, a couple of haters, but most people, they love me, and they're happy to see me. I think they enshrined a poster of me getting kicked out. Now, they love me.
You did have one of the most famous ejections in Cameron Indoor history, that is for sure. And you showed a lot of self-restraint that night. I'm still proud of you for that moment.
But Dan will tell you, if you're getting screwed, then, you know, you just, at some point, you have to stand up and
right.
You have to let the officials know how much you deeply care about them and their families.
That's all you can tell them.
That's all you
can care
do.
Deeply about your family. Stupid, you know what I mean? Yeah. Yep.
And I'm going to take the rest of this game off. So you got a big game tonight, though, North Carolina and Duke. What, are you going to learn more, Coach, about Duke, or are you going to learn more about North Carolina, you think, at the end of the night?
I mean, we know about Duke already. I mean, we know about Zion. If you don't know about Zion, you don't have a pulse. We know about R.J. Barrett, his triple-double. We know how great a defender Trey Jones is. We know that Cam Reddish has made some big shots. We know all that. I'm telling you, win or lose, no matter what, North Carolina's a potential Final Four team. You look at the teams that can win a national championship. I'm not even looking at that. I'm looking at Final Four teams. Could they beat Michigan? Yes. Could they beat Michigan State? Yes. Could they beat Kentucky? Yes. Could they beat Virginia? Maybe. They haven't done that in a while. But are they a team that could potentially be a Final Four team? Yes. And will we find that out tonight at Cameron? Going to be hard. If Trey Jones speeds up Coby White, they have no chance. If Coby White doesn't lose his mind and remains poised and pushes it on opportunity, facilitates, and then looks to score, if they can rebound the ball a little bit on the defensive end and not throw it away, it's going to be another typical Duke-North Carolina game. That Coby White-Trey Jones matchup is going to be a fun one to watch.
What are you thinking on this one, Doc?
I think Duke until further notice. I think Duke is better. I think Duke is tough. I think Duke plays, those veterans play like they're 30 years old. You know every night what you're going to get out of them. I love watching Duke. I think Carolina will have something for him, though. I'm interested to see Nasir Little, if anything he could do, or the bigs at Carolina, but seems like it's always a great game, and it seems to me, anyway, that this Duke team has, well, this is kind of a stupid statement given what happened last week with Louisville, but this Duke team has become really hard to beat. Let's put it that way. And when you're young and you're really hard to beat and you're kind of fearless, I see them beating Carolina, but I also see them later on losing to Carolina. I think the home teams in this matchup win games, depending on, you know, injuries or something.
Did that Tennessee loss, throwing this out to both you guys, did the Tennessee loss at Kentucky sort of open the door for another number one seed? I mean, I think going into that game, you thought, it looks like Tennessee just is a screaming one seed right now, and now maybe there's a little bit of a ding in that. Could it be Kentucky? Could it be a North Carolina or somebody else kind of assuming that number one spot, Seth? What do you think about that coming off of that loss?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, you know, it's not that loss. And I know Dan's going to poo-poo me on this, and I understand that. But I've been poo-pooed before. But as I look at Tennessee, if you can defend Grant Williams with some size and length, like, say, a Reed Travis, and you contain Bone, until Kyle Alexander shows some shot blocking and rebounding and consistency, I've got concerns about Tennessee as a national champion Final Four team. Kentucky went right down to P.J. Washington on the left block. They never doubled, and he worked in the middle. He shot jump hooks. I mean, that's what he did. You know, Kentucky took the fight to Tennessee. Now, will that be different in Tennessee? It probably will be. For me, as I look at Tennessee, I need to see more from Kyle Alexander or Fulkerson or one of those two guys. You can't play 5-on-4.
I like Kentucky, but I'm not poo-pooing either what you said or Tennessee. I think Tennessee has enough equity in terms of what they've done over the last couple of years and certainly over this year that one loss, even though it's at Kentucky and they got beat good, I don't walk away from them yet. I think so much of this is yet to be played out. But I do like a couple of things. One, I do like the fact that Kentucky is getting better. But what we have a tendency to forget, Seth, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I know we're all talking about them beating Tennessee, but earlier in the week they lost to LSU at home.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's not like this isn't the 76 Hoosiers here, undefeated, or, you know, I mean, so I get it, but you also got to say, wait a second here, you know, as well as they played against Tennessee, they didn't play so great against LSU and blew a game. So
they've got to get more consistent play. Like to me, Ashton Hagans, as he goes, usually they go in a lot of ways. P.J. Washington's been great. He's got to be in the conversation for player of the year in the SEC. Tyler Hero is rebounding the heck out of the ball from the guard position right now. I think he's playing really well. Kelvin Johnson plays with good energy. Nick Richards was very good the other night, and they kind of ran out of gas. And this is the dog days of the season. And you know what? We're going to have about a 6-7-day period. You saw the Purdue-Indiana game. You saw, you know, Kentucky, Missouri, you saw Tennessee and Vanderbilt. I mean, they're just ugly games. That's just going to happen. I like Kentucky a lot, and I think they're getting better. Reed Travis is hurt. That'll be an issue. I think their X factor is E.J. Montgomery. That's just me. I got one question for you, Dan, just going back to the Duke Carolina game. Like, Indiana-Purdue used to be a monster game. Monster game.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Does it piss you off that we're talking about Duke and Carolina and not the same vein that we're talking about Indiana-Purdue?
Absolutely. No question. Like, I get that, you know, Duke and North Carolina has earned it. The games have been great. Now, it's not that long a rivalry because I don't think until Montrose got hit in the head anybody really cared about the rivalry, or at least it wasn't that big nationally. But yeah, look, Indiana hasn't been relevant. Indiana hasn't. I mean, they don't go this year. They haven't been in a tournament in 3 years, much less anything else. You're risking a freshman class is going to graduate and not go to the tournament. Yeah, it does. But you get what you earn, and I think the two rivalries, I rank them differently. I think Louisville-Kentucky's number one and Duke Carolina's number two, but I'm probably wrong on it. But both of those games have, and both of those four programs have been nationally elite. Indiana simply has not, and Purdue, while very good, exceptionally good, hasn't been that nationally relevant either, and that's in the NCAA tournament I'm talking about. So, yes, I want Indiana-Purdue to be on that same vein, but other than in our, you know, in the own little gyms, or in, not little gyms, in Assembly Hall and Mackey, they're not, you know, and you get, like, I think, would you agree with this, Seth? Everybody thinks tonight this is going to be a great game because it seems like every time they play, it's a great game.
No doubt about it. And, you know, when I went back to a little of the history, I'm going to give you this one. It's interesting. How about if in 83-84, if that class of Allery and Billis and Dawkins, Johnny Dawkins and Henderson and Weldon, if that class never existed, there might not be a Coach K.
Right.
It's crazy,
right.
Isn't it?
He was on thin ice the first couple of years, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was in trouble.
Yeah, there's no doubt he was, but having said that, okay, it did exist. How did the rivalry become so good? Because both teams are really good every year. Yeah. You know what I mean? They don't take a year off from being really, really good. So, I don't know. To me, I always think you get what you earn, man. And well, that rivalry has earned it.
This brings me to the next rivalry. And really, when you think about Michigan and Ohio State, that rivalry has been born and bred on the gridiron. But it's still, you know, they still refer to the team up north, and Michigan refuses to talk about Ohio State. But you talk about Sunday, it's Michigan State and Michigan, really, that has garnered most of the attention, I think, on the basketball court,
wow,
at least over the last couple of years.
Right.
But don't you think, though?
Yeah.
And now,
absolutely.
Now this, you talk about number ones and potential number ones. This game on Sunday has that intrigue as part of the game because Michigan, despite the fact, Dockage, to your point, hey, let's not forget, they just lost to Penn State last week in awful fashion. And yet we kind of forget about that because if they beat Michigan State on Sunday, they could be looking at a number one seed down the line.
Right. They could. And really, over the last, I don't know, at least 2 years. Now, people forget Michigan came in fifth in the Big Ten last year. I mean, they, you know, made a great run, and they've won the tournament the last 2 years. And people also forget that Izzo and that crew, because they lost to Syracuse, people forget they went 16-2 in the Big Ten, which is phenomenal. Yep. Like,
crazy.
Like, two teams went 15-3, and that wins the Big Ten like 98% of the time. So really, Michigan has been at the forefront. I'm talking about the state of Michigan now, with Michigan and Michigan State, with Izzo and Beilein at the forefront of Midwest basketball, Big Ten basketball. And, you know, Seth, I don't know that you would put – people don't think of the Michigan-Michigan State rivalry in basketball as, you know, up there with those rivalries we've been talking about. But you can make the case this year it sure is. It absolutely sure is.
But it's got a little asterisk next to it because there's no Josh Langford.
Yeah.
Board, and that's going to, you know, obviously that's going to have an impact. I mean, there's such a small margin of error now for Michigan State. So much pressure on Cassius Winston. Talk about great matchups. Xavier Simpson, Cassius Winston is going to be an interesting matchup. Just, you know, if Xavier Simpson can contain or bother Winston at all, which I think is really hard to do, you know, without Nick Ward, a guy you can throw down into the block, without the depth in the front court. I mean, like, they had a great three-man rotation with Kenny Goins and Xavier Tillman and Nick Ward. And without Nick Ward, man, I'll tell you one thing, that's going to be interesting if Michigan State could survive that. Now, maybe at home in East Lansing with that atmosphere, with that energy, it's going to be a great atmosphere, great energy. Maybe they survive it. But that's a huge setback. I mean, you think when you come into the season thinking about those three juniors, now you got one of them.
Yeah, and hey, look, I've always said it's all right. It's great. You know, I'm not great, but it's all right to lose guys. But don't lose the wrong guys. And
yep.
Nick Ward is the wrong guy, and Langford is the wrong guy. So, you know, what the heck? They could be, but I don't see them being a Final Four team. But I think they'll play well, like you said, Seth, in these games. But, man, you're going to rely on some guys that haven't been asked to.
I think losing Langford eliminated him from the Final Four.
Yeah, I agree. Right,
he got 15 points. He could go, like, he's the other guy that could go get a shot. This is a come back to Carolina game. After Kobe White, who goes and get – if they get up and into and pressure Kobe White and get out and deny, who else on Carolina can go make a play? Who else on Michigan State can just go get a shot and make a bucket?
I tell you this, I do think that McQuaid has decided to go get buckets. And then I think on the other side, I think I don't think you can rely on him to get you to the Final Four like you could have Mo Wagner shooting it, or Duncan Robinson, or Muhammad Ali Abdul-Rahman. But I do think that Matthews is playing better.
Make some shots.
Yeah, but he's making them, you know, around the bucket, pull-ups, that kind of stuff.
Does that hurt Michigan's bid to maybe be a number one seed? The fact that Michigan State is not going to be viewed as the same Michigan State because of all the injuries. You know, you got a Minnesota on the bubble. Indiana's not good. You know, the fact that their record is not as gilded as it might look in another year, is that fair to say?
Yeah, I still think they can be number one team because it depends on what other people do. Like, let me ask you this. What if Kentucky goes and lays an egg? And what if Tennessee gets beat? And what if, you know, that LSU's not going to be number one seed? So all of a sudden, someone's got to be number one. You've got to pick four number one seeds.
It's like we got a lot of 2 and 3 seeds. You got the Marquettes of the world out there. You're throwing all these teams out there.
Can Nevada go undefeated the rest of the season And a couple of these teams falter. Well, you look and say, they don't have the wins.
Right. Houston, no way.
Houston has the bad losses.
Houston, there's no way Houston can get off that two line, even if they win out, right? Just because the schedule, it doesn't give them enough quality wins.
I think Nevada and Houston will both be number twos.
Yeah. And then you got a lot of people that could be potential twos. You got the Carolinas of the world. You got the LSUs of the world. You got Marquette in the world. All those teams seem like we got a lot of twos and threes, but nobody that really is like we have every year typically, that number one that just screams at you.
You don't have a lot of eights, nines, and tens because it's hard to get 68 teams.
Especially this year. Do you think it's harder this year, Doc, than it's been in previous years to find those teams that go in? You know, we're going to talk to Mark Few in a little bit about some teams maybe from the West Coast Conference, that second tier of team in that conference. Are they legitimate tournament teams? Because you got to find 68 teams out there.
Well, and I think Mark Few is going to have, you know, he'll be the promoter of teams that he's beaten by 30. You know what I mean? It's like, no, but they're really good. You know what I mean? Yeah. Look around. Like, if you were... Let's take the Big Ten. You know, I thought it was nonsense when they were saying they're having 10 teams. There's no way Indiana, unless they win out.
Nebraska's done too.
I'm saying they're not going. So Nebraska, same thing. Ohio State and Minnesota, they better win some games. You know, Ohio State's got Northwestern at home. You lose to them. I always thought it was nonsense when they said there was 10 teams from the Big Ten. So, all right, you get down to 7 or 8. Now, who are you replacing those teams with? That's the interesting thing to me. That is the problem.
That's the problem.
Right.
That's the
what
problem.
About a team like South Carolina? 9 wins in the SEC right now?
Around,
yeah, I am coming around because
Tom.
the way they're playing right now in the SEC, remember it used to be, hey, how about one of the criteria was last 10 games? Remember we used to look at that for the NCAA tournament?
Hogwash.
But you kind of have to look at that with a South Carolina. This team, you don't want to play this team right now, yet they're only, 14-12 overall, I think.
I'm going to be devil's advocate. Who have they beaten?
No, I mean, outside of conference play, I'm going to pull up their schedule.
Even in conference play, who have they beaten? Good win against Ole Miss yesterday. Like, here's the thing. All these bottoms of the league, it's like we talked about the other day. Dan, like, the bottom of the ACC, if you got Pitt, Georgia Tech, BC, Notre Dame, Wake Forest, if you play four of those and twice, there's a good chance if you're a pretty good team, you got 8 wins.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
I won 11 games in the league and beat number one in the country. Here's who South Carolina beat.
You want to know who South Carolina is?
No,
beating?
I really don't.
Okay.
Let me ask you this.
Let me ask you this.
Who should you have something in there that says, I tried to schedule really well, but those teams stink?
No, stop it.
Really? All right. Why? If I go out and try to schedule people and I go to West Virginia, it's not my fault West Virginia stinks. If I was a committee member, I would say, wait a second, those guys tried to schedule, not their fault. I would. I mean, I wouldn't.
I wouldn't. No, I agree with that. I thought you were talking about like the mid majors that say, well, I can't get anyone to play.
No, hell no.
Look, the mid majors are going to be weeded out because everyone's going to 20-game schedules, and you're playing an exempt event to 24. You're playing one or two made-for-TV teams to get to 26, and then you're playing home guarantee games.
Right,
that's just
the cost
of business.
So South Carolina, just listen to this. They've beaten Mississippi State at home.
Good win.
They've beaten Auburn at home, and they beat Ole Miss. Those are their three best wins. Now they have losses against Stony Brook, Providence, Wofford.
You said that was without Cotter.
Yeah, correct. And Wyoming, too, early in the season.
Wyoming's bad loss, really bad.
Plus, at Oklahoma State, they lost that game, too, out of conference.
But Oklahoma State was better than that before they suspended their whole team.
See, I always evolve. You guys, I evolve. I listen to what people say. And every year.
I think of you as a Renaissance man.
Every year, people go through this stuff where they say, look who they beat and look who they didn't beat. And every year the committee picks teams and everybody acts surprised. So I pay attention to what they say. And what they say is, who'd you beat and where'd you beat them? So I go, all right, okay, they beat so-and-so at home, doesn't matter. They beat this at home. So I'm sitting there going to myself, all right, are any of those road wins? And then the other thing they always talk about is bad losses. So, yes, they beat this team, good win, this team, good win. But bad losses matter. and where you beat them matter when it comes down to comparing two teams. That's why you guys both jumped on me and said, well, Indiana's not getting in. Well, yes, they are if they went out. Yes, they are, because they went to Michigan State and won. They beat Marquette. So they're not going to do it. But
yeah, I think that's part
I listen
of what we,
to all
what we
this
saying.
Stuff all the time, and I don't pay attention to, well, they won this game. Because these guys always come out when everybody sits there and is shocked at who makes the tournament. I go, wait a second. Did you listen to what they said? They said where you beat them. So my question then becomes, you already have bad losses for South Carolina. Are there any good road wins?
At Florida is probably their best road win, I think, looking at it.
It's a decent one.
That's about it.
That's it. And so don't be surprised when they don't make it and somebody else does, because every year it's the same thing. Well, where'd they beat them? They beat them at. And that got them in the tournament.
But I did a little I agree with you totally. But I did a little exercise yesterday and started looking at, like, the A-10, the CAA, and, you know, the Southern Conference and all that, saying, well, you know, so-and-so should get more than one bid. Now, the MAC, if Buffalo doesn't get in, the MAC should get – Buffalo should get in. Wofford, who won at South Carolina, by the way, by 20, if they don't win their conference tournament, they should get in. Then I started looking at, like, Davidson and other schools. None of those guys have good wins. None of them.
Right.
Yeah. See?
I mean, nada. Nothing. So, I mean, it's, you know, you got to find 68. I get it.
Right.
But, man, I tell you one thing. Woo! It's hard to find 68, and people are going to lose their minds when they have a high major team with, you know, more losses than wins. But when you play in a 20-game league schedule and unbalanced schedules where you play in maybe like the number one team in the country, third team or fifth team or seventh team multiple times, you know, any of those people you're comparing those guys to, you know, going to get in. Like we were told that when one year that we lost to Duke in the semifinals of the ACC tournament. Well, if you beat Duke, you would have gotten in. Well, anyone we were going to be compared to, we lost three. Were they going to beat Duke? No. So, like, that's really stupid.
Yeah, here's
say
the
we're not
thing.
Good enough to be in. Don't say, well, if you beat Duke. Well, because none of those teams we've been compared to.
Yeah.
That's what Duke. I'm saying. I'm saying every year it comes out and people say, well, they beat the – okay, where did you be? I'm telling you, it just seems to me – now, I could be wrong, but it just seems to me a big win on the road is huge. And Seth, to your point – this is new territory because, as you just said, there are 20 conference games now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is new territory for everybody because, well, with 20 conference games, guess what? The bubble teams are going to have more in-conference losses, as you just said. It's different.
That's right, it is.
Yeah, it is.
I agree. This, brilliant observations.
This might be the year where the committee says, God, we need a bid stealer in some of these leagues. Like, we need a Buffalo to lose to Toledo or Bowling Green.
Think they sit in those rooms
in retrospect, to keep a bad team out as opposed to most years when it keeps a good team out. You know, most years, a bid stealer keeps a deserving team, maybe a deserving team out. This year probably keeps a team that doesn't deserve to be it out.
Yeah, I see what you're saying with that, Chris. I do. You're basically saying make our job easier.
Right? Yeah, make explaining it easier on the back end.
No, I get that, but to me, every year, if I was in that committee room, it would all be the same thing because it's all relative. Whether it's high end, low end, it's all the same. We're comparing resumes and you know what? But I do think this year, having said that, I do think this year with leagues going to more games. All right, let me ask you this. The NIT, does the NIT have a rule? You got to be 500. Is that the rule? You got to win your league, you get in 500. Is that, but it's not 500 in your league, right? Because if it was, that'd be a little bit more interesting.
500 overall.
NIT rules, if you win your league, and yes, you win your conference tournament, you're automatically in.
Right. But there's no rule on 500?
Nope.
Because there's going to be teams with bad conference records, you know, that are considered for the NCAA that are going to end up in the NIT. Because of this extended conference schedule. I just think it's fascinating. I do.
And we'll have a lot of those NIT games on ESPN. And I'll be here in studio rapping just about all of them.
Hey, does speaking going back to Kentucky, Ross Travis plays for the Colts. Does Reed Travis's knee concern you?
Yeah, it concerns me because he's the perfect matchup to beat Tennessee because he's strong enough to get – Grant Williams off the block. He gives him an inside score, and the dude does rebound. Nick Richards wanted his opportunity. He's got it.
My boy, Nick Richards, most improved player in the country.
He's going to end up being the most improved player in the country.
Nick Richards, let's go, baby. Make me look good from the summer.
All right, we're going to hear from Coach Few in a minute, but first we got to talk about Vivid Seats. Don't settle for waiting in line. Shop for tickets to every game with the official ticket partner of ESPN. It's Vivid Seats. At Vivid Seats, you can see your seats before you buy them, and they're backed by a 100% buyer guarantee, so you never have to worry about missing out. You may have to find another way to spend your time besides waiting in line, because you'll never have to worry about waiting in line. Get a Vivid Seat right now. You can have any seat in the house, and you don't have to wait in line. Gonzaga head coach Mark Few joins us right now on Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic. And, Coach, here's the thing, that, and we've all talked about this with you guys, front-loaded your schedule at a conference. A lot of really tough games, and you navigated that pretty well in November and December. You hadn't lost a game since North Carolina on December 15th, and every one of those wins since then have been by double digits. So how do you keep your team focused night in and night out to the task at hand and the ultimate goal, which comes at the end of March, or really the beginning of April?
They're a very, very competitive group, and they're an older group, so that they understand you know what's at stake here and where we ultimately want to get to. So we think we're getting better week by week, and then they also have a very, very healthy respect for the opponents and the teams in our league. I mean, we've been fortunate enough to play really, really good in some of these games and extend some of these games, but it's been at the expense, I think, of showing that our league is considerably better, man. It's much better, and even to the point where I think it's the best league out on the West Coast. So you get in February, everything's kind of shrinking. All the margins are shrinking, and everybody kind of gets closer to the mean here. So we've had some tough games that we've extended right at the end that maybe didn't quite show how tough they were.
Few, how do you deal with the dog days of February, all right, and still keeping your team moving forward to kind of get them where they want to get to? Because you're the biggest game on everyone's schedule. I mean, let's face it. Yeah. I mean, every time you go on a road, it's not a game, it's an event, which is rare for some of those schools. So how do you deal, balance that all?
Which you and I were talking before we played Carolina. I was shocked how big of a game it was when we rolled into to North Carolina.
I killed you with that advice.
To be honest with you, Coach, that helps us. We don't walk into a dull environment by any means. We walk into, a zany, loud, best crowd of the year, best crowd in 5 years or whatever. And so it's hard not, you got to be, asleep to not respond to that. But the other thing is, and this was probably true when we a little more true when we had Killian on Mondays. We play Thursday, Saturday, so on Mondays we have competitive Mondays. I was able to do that our national championship game year. I mean, we get after it, we split the teams, and these guys hate to lose, and we really, really push ourselves on, and it's just all about us and doing different things and situations but it's everything's competitive. Every drill's competitive. Scrimmages are competitive, and I think those help us. And then we kind of dial it back and start fine tuning for the games on the Tuesdays and Wednesdays.
Hey, boss, do you talk about seeding? Do you talk about with your team where you could be, what you're ultimately trying to get to, or do you just let that play out?
That's a great question. I don't, Dan, really talk like specifically about seeding. What I do talk about, though, is just to give you an example, yesterday I told them, hey, I was watching Virginia last night, man. I mean, I said, you should have seen how well they were moving their feet defensively and keeping their hands back. I said, hey, guys, I mean, we're not there yet. That's a great example for us to aspire to. A week or two prior, I was talking to him about how hard Villanova was playing. Jay Wright's a great friend of mine, and I was just talking about I watched his team, and then how hard they were playing. I'm like, guys, I mean, we play hard, but I think they might be at times playing a little harder than us. And just citing examples like that for teams that that, you know, obviously we all know are very well thought of, and you know, again, teams that we want to aspire to be as good as.
I mean, that's a great point. You know, you without even bringing it up, you're bringing it up basically. You're basically setting the bar by talking about other teams. Sometimes any of the guys sometimes go, "Hey, coach, yeah, Virginia's good. So and so's good. Hey, we beat Duke. Come on now, and we're good also. And we're going to continue to work hard." Because I know you have a different relationship with some of those guys. Do they ever give you a little pushback on that stuff?
Well, I think they know I'm pushing I'm needling them a little bit. You know, I mean, obviously that's the. They know they beat Duke, and I know they beat Duke, and we won. They know. I mean, heck, you know, we went right down to the wire with Tennessee in a great game, and you know, led for most of it. So they know that, and in a way, I'm kind of needling them a little bit, just poking the bear.
Good.
But that works with them. They don't hang their head about it. It kind of takes them off, and they practice harder. And so,
hey, Brandon Clark, how good is this dude?
He's really good. You know. I don't want to say we're scratching the surface, but he's far from a finished product, and he's really, you know, learning how to play week by week. He gets better and discovers, you know, something else, whether it's, you know, a defensive technique or you know, something different he could do offensively, and just such a willing learner and so coachable and so not caught up in all the stuff that's going on, you know, all the buzz of whatever, player rankings or this or that, or he could care less. He just comes to practice, goes really hard, does whatever you tell him, and absolute joy to coach. But, man, I mean, I have never coached anybody that is as quick off the floor and just has such great timing and just so explosive for first jump, second jump, and heck, if he even has to mix in a third jump, it's pretty amazing.
Hey, Zach Norvell, last year all he did was make big shots in Boise. Like, he crushed me and my son. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. It's just devastating. Up five, and he started ripping shots. And it's all about me, Mark, as Seth knows well. I don't think this guy gets nearly attention. Now, sometimes that's hard, obviously, the West Coast thing. But this guy is as clutch a guy as there is in the country. Am I wrong?
You nailed it. Is what he is. The name escapes me. But who hit all those shots? A couple NBA championships in a row.
Robert Horry.
Big Shot Bob.
Yeah.
Big Shot Bob or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that is what Zach does. I mean, he has got an amazing gift that I don't think many of us have in any sport. In that. The bigger the moment, literally everybody talks about this, as you know, but the bigger the moment, the better he is. And he can be 0 for 7. And if it's 2 minutes, you know, left in a tight game and we're down one or up one and shot clock's winding down, it's like, look out. I mean, the dude can just make shots, and he is fearless. And, you know, part of that is not being afraid of maybe missing or the results, because I can't tell you, Dan, how many games he started 0 for 7, and, you know, I'm about ready to sit him and rest him a while, and he'll hit even a lay-in. And, man, if he sees the ball go through, and then I'm like, all right, we better leave him in here.
Right.
he gets on a roll.
Coach, you guys
get on the roll now, where we're still fine tuning him. He's not a finished product. Is sometimes he neglects to understand when the roll is over, and he keeps kind of letting it fly. The heat checks go a little bit farther than they need to after the roll.
But you guys were going to lose to Greensboro. Was it Greensboro in the first round?
Yeah.
And that was
a good team, by the way.
Yeah, really good. That was a hell of a game, and all he did was make big ones, and then he did the same thing against Ohio State. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Did you know that when you recruited him? Did you know that was part of his makeup?
I'll tell you what he did was he made 10 or 11 threes in a big, big game in a small gym in Vegas, you know, and just watched him in that in very much the same manner that you and I spoke about. And then once you got to talking to him and, you know, the makeup of him, I mean, he's from Simeon,
right?
You know, and in Chicago. So he's tough as nails and he's seen everything and experienced everything, but, and he's just a, he's one of those guys when he walks in a gym, a room, a house, he's got this infectious smile. He lights up the room. He's a positive entity and he's impossible not to like. So, I mean, I'll tell you the other big thing with him, he's one of our best leaders. I mean, our team really responds to him and he's got some real good leadership ability also.
Coach Mark, go ahead, Coach.
Last one. What, obviously you're a couple of weeks away from the tournament, everything. What are the two or three things you want to see your team grow in the next few weeks before the tournament? And, you know, obviously you have that big break, right, where you have time off before Selection Sunday, right?
Yeah, I mean, actually, we flipped our tournament a little bit, so it's extending slightly into that week. It's not as bad as it used to be. We'll have some days between Selection Sunday, and then our league did what I think is a smart thing. We gave some double byes now to the first and second team, so we won't have to play as many games in the conference tournament, so we'll have a little time there. First thing we need to be in both our losses, guys got after us on the glass pretty good, and we're constantly having to kind of learn that lesson. We had a couple teams in our league do it to us also. Sometimes we get caught up in just jumping or we're really, really good in transition, man. We can really score the ball and get out and run, and sometimes we leave a little early and don't stick around to make sure that we secure the ball on the defensive glass. So that's definitely the first thing, because that's cost us in both our losses. Second thing is, as you guys know, in the tournament, you know, you got to be tough enough and willing enough and convicted enough to get to that second action in offense. You can't just sometimes against other teams and people maybe that don't scout you well or can't stop you. You can score on first actions, but you got to be. We have a tendency, if we struggle, which hasn't been very often on the offensive end, is not getting to the second action and really forcing to move the ball, move the defense side to side.
Coach, you have slightly more coaching experience in the NCAA tournament than Dockich and Greenberg, just a little bit more over the years. When you look at the other teams in your league, BYU, St. Mary's, San Francisco specifically, are these tournament teams? Because the bubble is huge this year right now. We're trying to figure out how we're going to get 68 teams in, and you beat these teams by 30 points, and in St. Mary's case, you beat by 50 almost. So how do you make the argument that, this is an NCAA tournament when you guys have run just roughshod through the league?
Well, again, they're what these guys were able to do in their non-league. They were able to go out and play some teams. I mean, you know, I think LSU, everybody's raving about LSU. St. Mary's, I want to say, played them on a neutral. I think it was a two-point game or 3 or 4 points, something like that. They played Mississippi State, same thing. San Francisco had a great run in the non-league. BYU had a bunch of injuries and some things that they were fighting through. I think they're finally – and suspensions, and now they're finally whole. So they're one of those teams that's kind of hot right now. And they got some guys now, and they got older guys, and we were able to, you know, get after them and make a bunch of shots and things down at their place. But the thing about BYU is, like, that doesn't matter. Like, this next game, they are such a confident team and such an attacking team, the way they play. It could be totally different. They've beaten us up here more than any team's beaten us up here. So, I mean, I look at those guys, and I would say, yeah, definitely – one out of that group, you know, I mean, not all of them deserve, but one of them's probably going to play itself into where they should be. And because our league is definitely good enough. And, you know, one of those teams I think will separate themselves and probably should be in as an at-large, because they're definitely top 50 type level teams. Because I tell you what else they have, guys. They have size. And they have really, really old guards, like I don't know if you guys have seen him. That Frankie Ferrari kid at San Francisco.
Yeah, he's fun to watch.
He is a baller.
Yeah.
Okay. And Hawes and Childs. Like, Childs is an NBA player, and Hawes is an amazing college guard. And then St. Mary's. I mean, Randy Bennett, the way they just kind of do their deal, and he's got an excellent guard in Ford, and they have size. So, I mean, that usually works in college.
So two home games, Pepperdine coming up tomorrow, Thursday night, and then BYU over the weekend. Looking forward to that. Coach, thanks for joining us today.
All right. Take care, guys.
All right, time to pick some games, and let's start in the ACC, guys. And, Doc, I'm going to start with you. Virginia at Louisville at noon on Saturday on the ACC Network. Louisville, man, they just cannot finish out games, even though they were able to get a W the other day. It is nerve-wracking with them in the last couple of minutes.
So you ask that way. I mean, are you asking me for the pick, or are you trying to slant me one way? what are you doing? Is this a pick, or are you going, is there some slant?
Will they not be able to close out a game at home?
I don't know. Am I making a pick, or am I listening to you?
Pick it.
I'm just crapping with you. Hey, look, I don't like noon games for the home team. I don't. They're dull. The students are still hungover. So the home court advantage is not there. I don't think they can beat Virginia anyway, but I don't think the home court's as great, Chris Cotter. And by the way, has Georgia Tech won a game this month? Anyway, I digress.
They haven't, but they got the big one against Pitt at home to avoid the cellar in the ACC on Wednesday.
There you go. No, I lied. I like Virginia. I don't think Louisville can play with them.
What do you think, Coach?
Yeah, I like Virginia. I like what Virginia's doing. You know, you talk about, can Virginia close out a game? You know, when they get in a close game. I think they got two guys who can close out a game. I think they got Ty Jerome who can close out a game off the bounce with range, get to the rim. And I think DeAndre Hunter right now is playing at a ridiculously high level. I think they run Jordan Wara off the three-point line. They turn Louisville over because that's what Louisville does. They out-pack line Louisville, and they win a game.
Hey, Cotter, who do you like?
I like Virginia as well on the road, although I think Chris Mack.
Happy you've been paying attention.
Right. I think Chris Mack sort of has a big game in them with that team because they've struggled a little bit these last couple of games, but I don't think they're going to be able to beat Virginia. All right, number one seed might be in line in that game because Virginia is still looking like they could be a one seed. Tennessee could be too, but they got another tough game on the road, second week in a row. Now they go to LSU, Greenberg. What do you think about that one?
I like LSU in this game. And I'll tell you, the more I watch Tennessee, and look, they're really good. I'm not overreacting to the Kentucky loss. They need to get something out of Kyle Alexander. Mm-hmm. They can't get anything out of Kyle Alexander in this game. LSU's wins. It's a big game for LSU. They you know, we're not talking about them as SEC champions, and they're playing their way into it. They're like cash money when it comes to the SEC right now. But you're talking about an extremely athletic team. Length has bothered Tennessee. I think that that Cal created a little bit of a game plan of how to beat them. You got to defend Grant Williams early in the block. You got to stay between him and the basket, contain Jordan Bone. I think LSU, even though I don't think they're as tough as Tennessee, I like LSU at home.
You are overreacting. Why do you guys say you're not overreacting? You've been picking Tennessee for 2.5 years.
They went 9 minutes without scoring a bucket yesterday.
I just thought you swore at me. You said bucket, word.
It was close. I had my hand on the beat button.
I thought so too, Chris. I'm going with Tennessee. Look, one loss does not deter me. And I think, I'll tell you this much, though. LSU is pretty damn good. But I'm going with Tennessee. I think Tennessee, seasons are long. There's differences. There's different wake-up calls. There's different sadness times. And I think Tennessee got a wake-up call. Cotter, who do you like?
Yeah, I think Tennessee was sluggish against Vandy at home. I think they kind of got that out of their system. They'll be fired up. I'm with you, Doc. I'm going to take Tennessee at LSU noon on Saturday.
Smart. Two against one.
Florida. It's hard to win on a road.
I know it is.
Really?
And Florida State's got that task, too, at 3:45 on Saturday at North Carolina. The Seminoles have won a ton of games in a row here, Doc. Will they win in Chapel Hill?
I don't know. I don't think so. I always take Duke at home, North Carolina at home, Kansas at home, and Michigan State at home. But I'm going to stick with that. I'm going to take North Carolina. I'm going to be there Monday in Seminole Land for Florida State, Notre Dame. I think I just think that North Carolina, regardless of whether they win or lose the Duke game, has just got too much, and I don't like the way Florida State can score the basketball. So I'm going with Carolina,
Coach.
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think Florida State's an Elite 8 team, and I think they're going to get the double bye as the fourth team getting the double bye in the ACC. Having said that, I agree with that. I think Carolina, win or lose, I think Carolina will be number two seed, and they could be a Final Four team just like any of those guys at the bottom of the one line, early in the two line, or whatever you. I mean, because Coby White's starting to distribute. His maturation has been fun to watch. I think that this team has developed an identity. Obviously, they're going to make three-point shots. And Cam Johnson, man, every time he shoots it, you think it's going in.
Yeah.
I wish I had more guys like that. Maybe I wouldn't be on this podcast.
You'd still be coaching. You might be coaching a game in Cameron instead of just doing a television show there coming up later on. All right, Kansas at Texas Tech, 8 o'clock on Saturday night. Big one for the field, Coach Greenberg. Big one for the field in the Big 12.
I know I need to be politically correct, but guns up. I'm a big fan of the Fighting Chris Beards, especially at home. How hard they play. They've improved scoring it. You know they're going to defend. They're physical. Kansas is playing better, and that four-guard offense is pretty good, and Abaji is really, really good. But I've got Texas Tech holding serve at home.
Chris Beard lost me when he lost his mind over the walk-on dunk. And to hell with him, even though I really like him. So I'm going with Kansas. Walk-on dunk, stop it. Just stop it. Guys, walk-on should be able to dunk. Leave me alone. And
don't you think it was more he did that so that that Scott Drew would not think ill of him as a
Who cares?
I agree with you, Coach. I think that was a public display of
stupidity.
Support for Coach Drew.
Yeah, blah, 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 blah. Wow. Coach Drew's a big boy. He can handle if some walk-on dunks. Coach your own team. Shut the hell up and leave walk-ons alone. Free walk-ons!
Hey, it motivated Baylor because they went into Hilton Coliseum.
Right. They got a huge win.
That's
yeah.
Right.
Whacked Iowa State yesterday.
I'm going to go with Texas Tech. I'm with Coach on this one at home. I think that they hold serve, and it's a big win in the Big 12 because both these teams are 9-4 in conference play coming into this game. Thanks to our sponsor for today's show, Vivid Seats. We appreciate that. And don't forget, you can subscribe to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockett wherever you get your shows and rate and review us in Apple Podcasts. Thanks, guys. We'll see you next week.
Peace out.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockett. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.